President Trump will address the UN General Assembly today. One big topic, Iran.
It's really unclear at this point how much support he's going to be able to mobilize in the couple of days that he's in New York for the UN General Assembly.
And Google wins a case limiting the scope of Europe's right to be forgotten law.
That effectively means that there won't be global takedowns under the right to be forgotten.
Plus, Budweiser raises $5 billion in its Asia listing. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a closer look at what President Trump will have to say to the UN General Assembly today, here's what you missed. More than a week before a July phone call to Ukraine's president, Vladimir Zelensky, President Trump asked his acting chief of staff to place a hold on $391 million in aid to Ukraine. We reported that during the call, the president asked Mr. Zelensky to investigate Joe Biden's son over work he had done with a Ukrainian company. President Trump denied that he put pressure on Ukraine.
There was no pressure put on them whatsoever. I put no pressure on them whatsoever. I could have. I think it would probably, possibly have been okay if I did. But I didn't. I didn't put any pressure on them whatsoever. You know why? Because they want to do the right thing, and they know about corruption, and they probably know that Joe Biden and his son are corrupt.
Congress had approved the military aid to the country to help it defend itself against Russia. Our reportings found that the administration has given several reasons for delaying the aid. The reasons include wanting to review how the U.S. is spending aid, a lack of support from other countries, and concerns about corruption. An increasing number of Democrats are now calling for impeachment. Mr. Biden has denied any illegal activity and accused the president of abusing his office. And the European Union's top court ruled that Google does not have to apply the EU's right to be forgotten law to versions of its search engine accessed outside of Europe. From Paris, Sam Schachner has more.
This case has been rumbling for 4 years, shortly after the same court actually created the right to be forgotten back in 2014. Some EU regulators said, hey, wait a second, actually my right to have certain information from me not available isn't fully applied unless it's taken down globally. Google said that that would, you know, be a real threat to free expression and a incitation for tyrants around the world to apply their own similar rules and demand global takedowns.
But it's not a complete victory for Google. Here's Sam again.
There is a little caveat, which is that the court said that EU privacy regulators can, in specific instances where merited, order a global takedown. But that's a far cry from a general rule.
And we report that federal prosecutors are conducting a criminal probe of Juul. The probe is still in its early stages, and its focus isn't yet known. But it's an escalation of the scrutiny that Juul's facing from law enforcement. A Juul spokesperson declined to comment, and the U.S. Attorney's Office said it couldn't confirm or deny an ongoing investigation. Now, our main story this morning. As we told you yesterday, the world's leaders are all gathered in New York this week for the UN General Assembly. Already, there have been headlines, including a decision by several European leaders late yesterday to join the U.S. in blaming Iran for attacks on Saudi Arabia's oil facilities. And today is set to be an even bigger day, with President Trump addressing the Assembly. J.R. Whalen has been finding out more from Vivian Salama about what to expect.
So, Vivian, top of mind for President Trump will be mobilizing international pressure against Iran after imposing new sanctions. How difficult will that be?
It's pretty difficult because it's been made clear by a number of the major parties that would be involved that everybody sort of has their own view about how this should play out. And the French president has been trying to work as a mediator, trying to facilitate some sort of talks between the U.S. and Iran. So we asked President Trump on Monday during one of his bilateral availabilities whether or not he was open to the idea of the French mediating some sort of talks between the U.S. and Iran. And essentially, he said, we don't want a mediator. Iran knows our number. And if they want to call us, they can call us, but we don't want anyone getting involved. And so on the one hand, he's talking about wanting to build a coalition and the need for a coalition to pressure Iran. But on the other hand, he's telling everyone to keep out of it when it comes to any potential for future talks. And so it's really unclear at this point how much support he's going to be able to mobilize in the couple of days that he's in New York for the UN General Assembly.
You know, President Trump infamously calling out North Korean leader Kim Jong-un over the country's nuclear program and using a memorable nickname.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States has great strength and patience. But if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea.
Do you expect a different tone from the president this year to try and garner support?
Definitely expecting a different tone. So, I mean, President Trump has always viewed foreign policy as a need for peace through strength. And that's kind of been his mantra since the beginning. And I expect that this year is going to be no different. But what he's probably going to do, and especially keeping in mind the fact that we're 14 months away from a U.S. election now, is he's going to try to really tout how his approach has, in his mind, worked, you know, to exert pressure through economic pressure, not military pressure, sanctions on Iran, sanctions on Venezuela, sanctions on North Korea, even as he attempts to speak to the leadership there.
And climate change has taken a center stage on the agenda. And on Monday, several world leaders, including Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and German Chancellor Angela Merkel, pledged to do more to combat climate change. But the U.S. has been largely quiet. What kind of position does that put the U.S. in this year?
Well, this is a pattern with the Trump administration where it's essentially trying to stay out of many of the major climate summits because of the fact that the president has long been skeptical about climate change and certainly does not believe that fossil fuels are at the heart of any issues with regard to climate change. But the president on Monday surprised us, and he actually made an unscheduled cameo appearance at Monday's event, the Climate Action Summit. He sat there for the two speeches that you mentioned, India's Prime Minister Modi's speech. He even clapped at the end of it, and then he sat and listened to Angela Merkel speak as well.
So people might be very surprised on Tuesday during his address if he were to make comments promoting some sort of progress on climate change.
So at one of his bilateral meetings, I actually asked him why he decided to go to the Climate Action Summit, although just a brief, maybe 15-minute cameo. And his response was, "I like clean air and I like clean water." And that was pretty much how he left it. So it's a little bit vague in terms of where he sees the role of the U.S. as being. I wouldn't be shocked if he makes a passing reference to it, given the pressure and the fact that we've seen protests across the country on climate issues in particular this week. But whether or not he calls for any type of major action is probably unlikely. It's just not part of the president's repertoire when he gives speeches, you know, unless he surprises us.
You can find all of our coverage of the General Assembly, including a video of President Trump's address, up on WSJ.com. On to markets. $5 billion. That's the amount that the Asian business of the world's largest beer maker, Anheuser-Busch, raised in its second attempt to list its shares publicly in Hong Kong. Here's Quentin Webb with more.
So it's been a pretty busy summer for Anheuser-Busch InBev, the world's biggest brewer. It was originally trying to float an Asian unit in Hong Kong, but investors balked at the price and the size of the deal. And so in July, Anheuser-Busch InBev pulled that. Instead, it immediately went into kind of plan B mode, turned around, immediately sold a big chunk of the business, the Australian unit, to a Japanese competitor, banked about $11 billion from that sale, then quickly came back to the market in Hong Kong and floated the remainder, which is this kind of faster growing business, which is more focused on China, thus, you know, more palatable to investors. If you think about it, all in, they've actually raised more money from these two transactions than they would have done with a single listing earlier in the year in Hong Kong. And what's more, they have now created what is one of the world's biggest listed brewers here in Hong Kong. This is much, much bigger than, for example, household names in the beer industry like Asahi, the big Japanese group, or Carlsberg in Denmark. This company at $45 billion is roughly twice the size of those two. So it has been a kind of complicated back and forth process. But I would say AB InBev has been very nimble. And in total, this actually looks like a pretty good transaction for them.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. Apple said it will be keeping the production of its new Mac Pro in Texas. The confirmation comes after the Trump administration granted tariff exemptions to 10 items that Apple imports from China. These include things like a logic board and a power supply. Tim Cook said in a statement, quote, "We thank the administration for their support enabling this opportunity." The Mac Pro is Apple's only major computer to be made in the United States. We should add here that the Wall Street Journal has a commercial agreement to supply news through Apple services. And after 3 days of contentious testimony, Britain's Supreme Court ruled that Boris Johnson's decision to suspend Parliament for 5 weeks was against the law. From London, Stephen Fidler has more.
It's a significant blow to Boris Johnson's government. He came to office, he's lost a lot of votes in Parliament, and now the Supreme Court has said that his decision to suspend Parliament for 5 weeks was unlawful. That means that he won't be able to do this again before October the 31st. So there had been speculation that he might suspend Parliament over October 31st, when the UK is due to leave the EU. That can't happen now. The question is whether Parliament will be coming back in the next few weeks, in the next week or two, and that will be an embarrassment to him, I think, rather than anything of huge political significance.
Boris Johnson's government said it would abide by the ruling of the court. Finally, here's some good news if you've ever been tempted to put your apartment on Airbnb but have been scared off by your landlord. Some new developers are now explicitly touting to buyers that they're open to having Airbnb rentals. Where? Well, one company, NewGuard, is marketing condos in places like Miami and Austin. In order to avoid regulatory risks, the properties will all have hotel licenses. But there is a downside. There always is. If you want to buy one of their apartments in Austin, because of those hotel licenses, owners will only be able to live for 30 consecutive days in their apartment. Would you do it? Let us know. Tweet us at WSJ Podcast or email us at whatsnews@wsj.com. Your comments might be used in follow-up reporting. That's What's News from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.